Item number 12.
From the interim director, Department of Health and Human Services, providing an overview of DHHS's and the Behavioral Health Division's 2012 requested departmental budgets. Informational only unless otherwise directed by the committee.
Good morning. Good morning, Friday. Alex?
Good morning, Madam Chair and Supervisors. I wish I could be quite as optimistic as Director Stein was about the impact on our budget. It's not quite that good. I think just some general kind of comments. We really struggled in developing our budget because we have almost every department which is impacted by some state cuts and reductions. We also felt it was extremely important to protect the core services and many of the safety net services that we provide through the department, as well as many of you know, we're in a pretty extensive mental health redesign, and we also felt that we needed to demonstrate some very positive efforts to look at some expansion in our community-based system to really try to advance some of the initiatives that are going on there. So with that in mind, we've attempted to try to develop our budget kind of using that three-prong approach, as well as I think a unknown that we have at this point, which is about the $500 million Medicaid cut that is yet to come forth that the state is looking at, and we don't have a good sense at this point how that might impact us. We do utilize throughout the department, we draw down on Medicaid dollars in a number of different areas. So, you know, there could be some additional potential cuts that we aren't aware of at this time. So that is still, you know, relatively an unknown for us at this point. As we look at our Delinquency and Court Services Division budget for 2012, we are really trying to continue some of the real positive efforts that Mr. Moe has been implementing. I think Mr. Cooley talked about those earlier. We did have a $3.5 million state reduction in our youth aids revenue. We really have absorbed that for 2012. In our budget, we believe that we will be able to absorb that because we've been doing so well in terms of our budget that we've been not utilizing and referring large numbers of kids to state facilities, but we've been using community-based programming. And again, that's to the efforts of Mr. Moe and his staff. So we have absorbed that cut. There are no reductions there. They are looking at a realignment of some of their positions and programming to be better, to achieve some efficiencies. So they are looking at some redesign efforts and also looking at some other initiatives that are going to include development of perhaps some risk tools and some best practices in the delinquency and court services area. You've heard quite a bit about the cap on family care in the disability services area. The huge issue is going to be the cap for younger persons with disabilities. And as many of you know, we've worked really hard to try to move that initiative along. You know, a couple of years ago, we were here and received support from this committee to move on with the Disability Resource Center, as well as moving younger folks with disabilities off of the waiting list. I can certainly tell you that we've had similar stories. I know of one family in particular who were forced to place a young adult with a disability in a nursing home because they were not going to be able to wait due to the cap that we have. And we really were so close. When we look at where we were almost 2 years ago with a waiting list of about 3,000 individuals, we are now about 2,000 in individuals, so we've made progress. And part of that 2,000 are individuals that were referred since we started. So if we look at that original list of individuals that had been waiting, you know, we made some substantial gains. In fact, the young woman, there was a story in the journal of a young woman who'd been waiting 10 years on the waiting list and really just got services this year, and in fact, she was telling me yesterday that she was getting her own apartment, she was moving out, she was really beginning to start her life in terms of some independence because she was able to receive family care. So it's really tragic. We are going to work with trying to provide some options through working with St. Anne's Intergenerational Center. We've been working with them for about the last 5 years. They have a volunteer resource bank, and what they try to do is to get businesses to volunteer dollars and services that we might be able to match some of the needs of individuals on our waiting list, and it has been a real invaluable service that we've been able to utilize, and we're going to continue those kind of efforts to try to provide resources and be responsive to those individuals on the waiting list. I think the other unintended, real sad consequence is that this is going to impact our children and families who have disabilities, because one of the things that automatically happened is once you were on a children's waiver, when the family care program was open, once you turned 18, you could transfer into family care, thereby opening up another waiver slot for a family that was needed services of a younger child. We were able to eliminate that waiting list last year of about 500 families. So we're going to go back to a waiting list for kids and families with disabilities, as well as expand our waiting list for individuals 18 to 59. We also know that there's going to be some impact on our behavioral health division, because once individuals are disenrolled and they go into, say, a short stay in a hospital or a behavioral health facility, they lose their slot. So we've already seen individuals who've been admitted into BHD who have lost their slot, they don't have family care because of the gap, and then they're there for much longer days than they need to be, which is going to also present, I think, some significant challenges for us at the Behavioral Health Division. These issues have been raised with the state. We've not got anything that's been satisfactorily at how we manage it. It is really unfair that if you go into a hospital that you would lose your slot that you already have in family care, and then, you know, a week or 2 weeks later, you have nothing. So this whole thing is just a travesty. We're going to work as hard as we can. We are working with the county executive. I'm sure some of you saw the letter. And just trying to employ pressure and a number of efforts to see how we can get some relief on the family care cap. In the housing division, we've also seen a federal cut there in the community development block grant. I think we talked about this with the Economic Development Committee. While it wasn't a state cut, it was a 17% reduction in community development block grant. So we do see a slight reduction there. We're also looking at ways in which we can become more efficient within that division by employing a electronic funds transfer system. Some of you may remember that we also run the Section 8 voucher program, and we pay landlords for those vouchers on a monthly basis. The majority of that work is done manually, so this electronic transfer system will automatically transfer those funds, to many of those landlords. So that will be some internal technology efficiencies. We are impacted in the economic support division. The state has decided to centralize all of the income maintenance functions statewide. They are going to be developing consortia, 10 consortia or regions. Milwaukee County is going to become their own region. And the plan is that many of those employees that are now employed by the county will move into the state system and become state employees. We have about 271 positions currently in the income maintenance area, when about 220 of those are actually filled. This impact could also mean, if they decide to move from the COGS building, that we will have some loss of revenue as it relates to rent, and then we'll be forced to look at other tenants for space. They've not indicated that at this point, but, you know, there is the possibility. We do have a contract for the remainder of 2011. I think 2012, you know, continues to be seen as to what will happen in that area. We have had discussions with the county executive. He's been in touch with the secretary, and there will be more discussions because the amendment in the budget says that after it is passed, that the state must begin discussion with Milwaukee County 30 days, and within 60 days identify those areas of concern back to joint finance so that we can begin planning how this is going to impact us. The last area in economic support division is the whole issue of, as the positions move to become state positions, what will be the impact in terms of those legacy costs that each department has. That will also be an issue that we'll have to have further discussions on. In the behavioral health division, this is where I think we found to be very challenged. We felt a strong responsibility to try to identify some areas in terms of our community-based system that we could plan for expansion. So we have identified about a $1.6 million multifaceted initiative to expand several of our community resources. We are hoping that this will be a very positive step in looking at our mental health redesign, demonstrate our commitment to move forth, and also recognize the fact that we cannot move forth unless we begin some expansion in that area to really raise the bar and really enhance our community-based service. So we've identified a number of areas that we would look at expansion, which could include additional peer supports, might look at an additional 8-bed crisis respite facility. We also have an initiative that we would work with the Disability Services Division around individuals that have who are duly diagnosed with a developmental disability and a mental health area. And we would also look at some expansion in our outpatient services. So we have added this initiative as part of the BHD budget. We also are looking at outsourcing our targeted case management program. There would not be a loss of positions because those positions for those individuals would be able to be redeployed. We have seen this year several of the individuals in that program retire, so we kind of view this as an opportunity to redeploy that staff to help with other initiatives while we looked at utilizing a community-based agency to continue to provide that service. We're going to continue our efforts next year in BHD to achieve Joint Commission accreditation. There was a progress report at the last meeting, and we have a report at this meeting, which talks about the additional funding that we need. That is going extremely well, and we view that as very important. We also are going to be continuing with our electronic medical records. You know that we've started that initiative. We anticipate that will be very positive and that it will yield perhaps some additional revenue once that system is imposed. We have begun that at the beginning of the year, and that should be in its implementation phase by the end of the year and continue through 2012. In our alcohol and substance abuse area, we had a state reduction in services. As you can see, there's about a $500,000 reduction that will go directly to our alcohol and substance abuse area. This was not an area that we absorbed. We are passing that cut along. The decisions about how that's going to be implemented, we haven't made, but it is included in the budget. And then we also had a $700,000 reduction in our mental health area. That was a state cut that was passed along to counties. It was actually a 10% cut in the GPR dollars that the county received. The last area, we still have within the DHHS budget about a $3 million placeholder. And here again, I think we are going to ensue discussions with the Department of Administrative Services and the county executive about filling that $3 million. DHHS has an $88.9 million tax levy target, and we've met that with the exception of about $3 million that we've not identified yet. We do have some suggested options that we're going to be talking with the county executive and DAS about, but at this point, we still do need to address that in terms of kind of finalizing our budget, and that will be addressed by the time the county executive presents his budget to you. Any questions?
I have one.
All right, Supervisor Mayo.
Thinking about laying people off.
No, not actually. We have we're looking at kind of reorganizing some of our positions and changing some positions that we have to be more in line with some of the changes we're going to need to make in Disability Services Division, but we don't have any actual layoffs. The changes of the positions, we will have opportunities and places for individuals to go.
How many vacancies do you have?
That's a tough one. I don't know. We
Madam Chair, Supervisor Mayo, there's a report in front of Finance this cycle that the information is a little older. I think this information was from May, as of May 5th. But the Behavioral Health Division has 185 vacancies out of 843 positions. And the Department of Health and Human Services has 65 vacancies out of 663. Now, I can tell you that the Behavioral Health Division has less vacancies than that currently because we have done at least two classes, if I'm not mistaken, of CNAs since that time.
Do you generate revenue for your department?
Pardon me?
Do you generate revenue?
Yes, we do. We generate Medicaid revenue. We have commercial insurances. We receive revenue from our HMOs. In fact, the Medicaid revenue that I spoke of earlier, we have several programs such as the Community Support Program, Targeted Case Management. We also have revenue, as does the Department on Aging, that we are generating in our resource center. So we have several, we have quite a reliance on a lot of Medicaid revenue.
Out of those positions that's vacant right now, how many of those could be filled and could generate more revenue for you?
We would really have to do an analysis of that. We are aggressively filling our vacant positions. We've had a number of retirements in the last quarter, so you know they're at various phases of filling. I think we'd have to look how many of them were actually revenue producing. We've worked real hard to fill those positions that are revenue generating first. So I think we'd have to do an analysis department by department to really answer that, Supervisor Mayo.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Did you?
Ms. Lucy?
I just said to Supervisor Mayo that the VHC, our vacancies have a dramatic impact on our overtime expenses. So revenue is also a piece of it, but our overtime expenses is pretty directly related to our vacancies.
Mm-hmm. Alex?
What did that mean?
She covered, Ms. Barney
covered
VHC's budget as well.
Madam Chair. Okay. Supervisor Mayor, I was going to mention on the behavioral health side, we are paid revenue on a per bed basis. So, although we have many vacancies, as Ms. Lucy mentioned, it usually results in overtime rather than a reduction in revenue per se for the bed because the bed is open. If there's a client there, we're staffed appropriately. Supervisor Lipscomb.
Thank you. Question on the TCM privatization. This keeps coming up. What's the intent? Is this about savings or is it about better results? Or why do we keep coming back to it?
I would ask Miss Lucy if she wanted to address that, but I would certainly say it's really because we've had a number of retirements there, and because we are looking at ways to kind of increase some of our additional initiatives, we can redeploy some of that staff that can work in other areas, and we do have some community-based agencies who perform very well in this area. So it is really... we're not really going to be saving dollars. We're going to continue the service and continue to utilize the staff in a different capacity for some of our other new initiatives.
Yeah, that's right. I think that due to the retirements and whatnot, I think that presents us with an opportunity to redeploy this back out into the community, utilize our staff that have experience in community management to do some of our new initiatives and keep those kind of closer to us.
I mean, the information we've always gotten in the past is that our staff, as opposed to the vendors we were using, were dealing with more difficult clients, or they had different caseloads, that we always had them as sort of a backup when we had problems with vendors in the past. And so I have my concerns about us not having some in-house capacity on TCM. And obviously, we sort of fought this thing. In my 3 years, I think we fought it every year. So I'll be interested in understanding more about how it will make things better, particularly if it's not.
I think in previous years, having been privy to some of those discussions, it was about savings, that we were looking at achieving some savings. This is clearly, I think, very different. You know, we were challenged with trying to look at how we could provide additional resources through our mental health redesign. We have some very good staff that have some expertise. And this was an opportunity, as Miss Lucy said, for us to be able to continue to provide that service, also utilize that staff and some other initiatives which can backfill some of the other areas that we're looking to expand. So we really were trying to be, I think, creative in how we utilize that staff, utilize their skills, and this really was for, I think, driven by very different types of issues this year.
I'll continue to watch that and look for more information as we get into the budget.
One of the things also that I know has been discussed is that we have added in our budget proposals two additional quality assurance coordinators for the community services place to really look at performance in a different way, in a more intense way, of all of our providers, so of our vendors. So I think that that's been some of the issues in the past, and we're trying to address that in a different way.
Okay. Madam Chair, I also have a question about the transfer of the economic support staff to the state. I may have missed the timing of the consortium.
The budget says that they would look at this process in 2012. My sense, this is just clearly my sense, because many of the other counties are still actually operating income maintenance functions, they'll have to develop those consortiums. Milwaukee County, for the most part, we've already been, taken over by the state. We have a model, that works. I think the issue will be how the staff will transition to the actual state system. We also know as part of the budget that there are about 60 individuals who the state has indicated have not reached, they're not vested yet, will be given the opportunity to be vested with Milwaukee County and then transfer to the state system. What we need to be assured of is that they're going to cover our cost. They're going to cover all of the costs associated with that. Everyone else who is not impacted by that whole area of being vested, they are going to be offering them some type of process to transition into the statewide system.
Wow, it's going to be a mess. Effectively, for all other employees, this will be increasing. Yes, these legacy costs are transferred. It'll be effectively increasing what all other employees are picking up now.
Absolutely. And there could be some impact in terms of positions where we have similar classifications. for instance, in our clerical area, you know, what is going to be the process for those positions? You know, who will want to go? Will those individuals have any rights in terms of the, you know, same classification? We don't have any income maintenance staff other than those that are there by designation, but we do have other classifications that are countywide. So these are really the types of questions that we're going to need to get clarified. I actually had a meeting with the county exec yesterday. He's pretty up to speed on this issues, on these issues, and will be begin some discussions with the secretary to make sure that, you know, these issues do work out in Milwaukee County's best interests.
While we're not certain of the timing in 12, what is the impact on the shared revenue side? Under the current hybrid, they stipulated that we were kicking back $3 million or whatever. I forget what they ultimately settled on, but what is the what is that? What's the change there?
You know,
Madam Chair, Supervisor Lipson, if I understand the question correctly, the state budget still states that Milwaukee County will pay the $2.7 million mm-hmm. piece. That has not changed. They changed the manner in which we would pay, and instead of making a payment, they would intercept our BCA. But it's still a $2.7 million piece. If on the shared revenue side, for example, shared services side, for example, as Ms. Lighty mentioned, the COGS building, they pay part of the rent. IMSD charges, they pay part of IMSD charges. The legacy costs, which we've discussed, those are all things included in the DHHS budget for 2012 as is, because we have not had those discussions and we're not clear on if they're going to stay in the COGS, how the legacy would play out.
Okay. I'm sorry, BCA?
Basic county aid. Okay. Community aid is money that comes from the state to the counties.
Just speaking of the BCA, I think Stephanie alluded to this earlier. With every program that the state has began to run, their mantra is that the dollars that the county has invested to make those programs work generally all go to the state. Some of you may know that we're paying money to the state for child welfare. As we transitioned into family care, the Department on Aging paid money close to $19 million of money that we had invested. The Disability Services Division also gave up our discretionary money of about $8 million, as we did in income maintenance, and that's the $2.7 million that Alex is talking about. So they always take some of our discretionary local dollars that we've invested in these programs.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, no problem. I have Supervisor Jersey and then Supervisor Mayo.
Oh, thank you. Do we know how many employees are in the income maintenance division? That
we have about 271 budgeted, about 220 are filled.
Because I think you're going to have to do that employee by employee, because you're going to have to look at start dates, et cetera. I don't know any other way to do that. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a total mess.
It certainly is going to be somewhat complicated as we get filled out. We are compiling a list of our questions now. We've been working with Corporation Counsel as well as HR. We have a work group to make sure that we identify all those areas of concern to share with the state and begin to hammer these details out.
You indicated St. Anne's Intergenerational Center, and I mm-hmm. just want that is a St. Francis-based organization, and that group does a great job of thinking out of the box. And I'm glad you mentioned some of the programs they're doing, and I think we're going to have to start being creative like that in our own redesign, and I know we've got some additional things later in the program, but with the loss of funds that you're talking about and then the 1915 I ultimate conclusion, which is something I feared during the last budget and talked about it often, about the entitlement aspect of that, I quite frankly don't know how we're going to do a successful redesign. I mean, I just don't know. I mean, if we need to continue to get funds, how we're going to be able to design a program that's going to require us to have initially more resources up front. you used that term backfill several times, and the way I understood backfill basically is tax levy money that's going to come in, and if we're not going to be raising our own property tax revenues, the only way I understand backfill then is we're going to be taking it from other programs, parks, transit, et cetera. And I wonder if you have a total, quote, backfill number in all these different programs that you went through. What is the number?
That we, the cuts that we absorbed, that we backfilled.
Is
because
just,
what we did is, as opposed to passing it on to service cuts, we absorbed it in our budget, and we had a $700,000 cut in mental health. We did not pass that on as service cuts. We had a $3.5 million cut in our delinquency and court service area. We did not make any cuts there. The one area that we did pass on was in the alcohol and substance abuse area of about $400,000. We will pass that on to actual providers because it was passed on to us from the state. That was one area that we did not absorb within the budget. Were there other areas?
I said there one in the behavioral support that was $5,000.
Which one?
Family support, $85,000.
Okay, $85,000. Okay. A family support reduction.
I
think we filled that with levy. So in essence, what we've done is said these were important for us to try to absorb. We did not pass those on. But what we have now is that $3 million placeholder that we want to have some discussions about. If we pass on those cuts, those will be cuts to community-based providers, cuts to services. And what we tried to do was maintain, I think, the integrity as much as we could of those discretionary programs and those mandated programs that we have.
And I'm trying to understand that number. You talk about absorbing, then there are some areas where we're not going to absorb. Mm-hmm. What is that number? Is there a number for us?
I can, Madam Chair, Supervisor Jerzyk, I do have a summary table that I can get you with the exact dollar amounts.
Okay.
Which I can send to you later. Basically, we absorbed, if you look at it in three groups, about $800,000. In our tax levy target, there is about $800,000 in state cuts, which we filled in with levy that we were allocated. There's about $3.5 million in youth aid cuts, which we are able to absorb through successful programs that Mr. Moe and his team have been able to employ instead of using the correctional facilities from the state. And the third group is the $500,000 AOTA cut, which we then reduce services by the same amount. But I'll send you the little table.
Madam Chair, could I ask, could we get a report on that? And then
okay.
I'd also like, in listening to Ms. Lydane, and I'd like to start to put my finger on this. I mean, the county has chosen to do some discretionary programs and put dollars in it, only to hear that then the state, quote, takes it and charges it. Now, when we talk about the state taking it, we're not talking about our Milwaukee County elected reps. It's elected reps from throughout the state who then take resources out of Milwaukee County. And dollars have been going out of Milwaukee County to the rest of the state in all kinds of creative ways. I'd like to at least identify this area. And I think there's a real issue there with regard to loss of representation, and there actually may be some constitutional issues involved in that issue. I want to try to get my finger on that. So could we get a report on when that has happened, what the dollars are, so we can start perhaps even creating our own game plan on this, because I think that is something we need to start objecting to. We are not being represented properly when other reps across the state can force those dollars out of our county.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to know what those are. So if we can get a full report on that, thank you.
We'd be happy to do that.
Please make sure you include Badger Care. When we ended our
yes.
program,
mm-hmm.
now we have a, what is it up to? 80,000 people waiting list? Badger Care or something like that.
But it's the control of those funds. I think there is a legal issue there, and I think after we get their report, we may actually want to have Corp Counsel look at that as well. Okay. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Does anybody else have any other comments, questions, concerns regarding the report? Thank you very much.
All right.
Thank you.